you know, the reality is Drive to Survive was, I think, maybe a $10 or $15 million investment by Formula One, which is, you know, like a catering budget probably for one of their events. But the ROI on that has been just spectacular. So I think there's a lot of opportunities around this world and around the platforms for sports. But it's all about addressing the challenges and how you engage your audience.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Exceedo Playback Podcast, the podcast bringing you the latest industry news, trends, and tech advancements in the OTT and video streaming industry. My name is Stanley O'Shea, and I'm joined alongside my fellow co-host, as usual, Neil Van Zyl.
Let's go ahead and introduce our guest. Michael, would you like to give us a little bit of an intro about yourself?
Sure. Thank you, Neil. Thank you, Stanley. My name is Michael Shevchenko. Currently, I am the Vice President of Digital Operations for the Anthem Sports and Media Group.
Yeah, super excited to have you on, Michael. And Neil, why don't you give us a little bit of background about what we're hoping to discuss today with Michael, why we have him in the room in the first place?
Yeah, we want Michael on because we wanted to talk all about sports. The fall is the perfect time to discuss all of this. We have tons of things going on, and NBA and NHL are just about to start as well. So we're just going to hop into sports, OTT, and everything in between. And Michael is an expert. So we are really excited to just chat with him. And hopefully we can just talk a little shop while we're at it.
Yeah, for sure. Looking forward to it.
Fantastic. Yeah. So just generally speaking, Michael, assuming you're a sports fan, we've got a lot of sports on right now. NFL just started up. F1 wrapping up. MLB. NHL preseason. Not sure if you're into that. What are you currently watching on your screen right now?
Everything you mentioned, just from an industry point of view and knowledge point of view, you need to be watching and checking into everything from a sports fan point of view. I'm watching my usuals. I'm watching F1. I'm watching NFL. Hockey is ramping up, as you mentioned, waiting for NBA. And I would be remiss if we didn't talk about the Blue Jays attempting to make the playoffs and taking it down right to the last wire, like they always seem to do. So if there's sports on, I need to be watching, and I'll throw some things out there too. I'll be totally self-serving and self-promoting. We are also the channel for pickleball, you know, with Game TV. So they're, you know, watching that as we're starting to air those things live in our space as well. So it's an exciting time. There's a plethora of stuff to watch. Too many sports, not enough hours. But that's the reality of this time of year. Neil said it. This is the window of sports right now.
Yeah, I got to say, Sundays, all I want to do is, in Canada, we don't have YouTube TV where they have the four screen setup where you can watch four games at once. So I'm flipping through to Zone trying to watch one game for 5 minutes and jumping back and forth. And it's not the most productive way to do it, but maybe I'll find another solution.
Red Zone, NFL Red Zone. That's all you need.
Actually, we very much envy your job, Michael, as somebody who has to watch sports. Unfortunately, well, it's something that we can do, but it sounds like for you to stay up to date, you're probably watching a lot more than us. Is there any one that you're most interested in, or you have a favorite sport out there that you're currently watching?
I'll phrase it this way. Like if I remove myself from the fandom side of things, if I look at things rationally from a work side, I'm always interested really in who's advancing the audience engagement piece. So leading into the NFL season and the first couple of weeks of the NFL season, you can't help but watch, because they are going to be the ones who are trying all the different ways to engage fans in new and interesting ways. They have the budget and they have the ability to do it, and they have the partners to do it. So whether you're seeing the new features that Amazon's running for Thursday Night Football, or you're watching the traditional broadcast and how that's looping into engagement pieces, it's always going to be kind of the best testing ground. You see similar things along the way of how sports are kind of expanding their audience. Everybody knows and has talked a million times about, you know, Drive to Survive driving F1's growth in the US, which is really going to reach a pinnacle in a month and a bit when they hit Vegas. It's not just kind of another race. Like F1 is really staked out a physical presence, like buying land, building a permanent structure there, and taking over a city like Las Vegas in a manner that no sport has ever done, right? This isn't that somebody, you know, as amazing as the Raiders are and building the stadium is amazing, letting us an event kind of dictate the flow of a city like Las Vegas is really interesting. And I'm really curious to see where that happens. I'm also curious just to see other sports, other, you know, a lot of sports I think are facing some interesting challenges. If I go to the NHL, there's a real challenge in engaging youth. And that's not just, you know, people to watch the sport. How are they engaging audiences to get kids to play? It's a huge, you know, kind of challenge that league faces. It's an expensive sport. It's very much like a regionally niche sport for development. How are they going to tackle that? And they need to. There are generational changes like coming in fans. Those are all interesting things. And I know we're supposed to be talking OTT, but I think all these things fit into that because it's always, what are your KPIs? What are your concerns? What are your challenges? And how are you going to address them? And specifically, how are you going to address them, you know, through technology? The fact is OTT, or we want to call it digital delivery, that's your number one avenue to engage fans, get them to watch, get them to consume. So you have to be, you know, you have to be advanced, you have to be thinking, and you have to find the right avenues. It doesn't always have to be a giant execution. You can be smart on if you're trying to engage kids, there's very many interesting ways on platforms that are more than happy to help you, be it social platforms or through straight video, that I think are, you know, those are the keys. What are your KPIs? What are you trying to do? And how are you going to achieve that in the space? And it's essentially limitless, whether it's like NFL, where it's cubic dollars can solve a lot of problems, or it's smart moves. You know, the reality is Drive to Survive was, I think, maybe a $10 or $15 million investment by Formula One, which is, you know, like a catering budget probably for one of their events. But the ROI on that has been just spectacular. So I think there's a lot of opportunities around this world and around the platforms for sports, but it's all about addressing the challenges and how you engage your audience.
That's awesome. And that lends really well into my next question. Do you think the sports OTT industry is still growing? And where do you think for some of these sports that have yet to fully leverage OTT, where should they be focusing to drive greater engagement with the sport?
If we're talking OTT in kind of the typical, let's just say the standard measurement, where it's like an owned and operated video service that a league, a team, whoever it is, a rights holder is putting out there, yes, but it's all relative. And I think the one thing that becomes when you work on this side of the business is you're always trying to find, for obvious reasons, the best bang for your buck. In some cases, you might not be of a critical enough size where running your OTT service makes sense internationally. You just won't have the audience. You can't justify the costs, despite the fact that an owned and operated service, at least in my opinion, is generally the best way. You know, when you can control, it's my product with my customers interacting with my product, that's the ultimate solution. I'm not sending it to someone else to distribute. But the reality is those are generally a little more expensive, require a lot more investment internally as far as marketing, support, curation. It's very easy to send content to, you know, be it a fast channel or a partner like YouTube, where a lot of that curation, and a lot of that distribution is you're really aided. You obviously give up things, mainly like the data and being able to interact with your audience. So yes, just to go back, I know it's a long way of answering your question. Yes, it's still likely the best way, but I think it's the form needs to suit the business model. And I can speak, you know, from an Anthem point of view, we operate in the sports realm, Impact Plus, which is a direct consumer subscription service. That for that business, that is the best way for us to engage with our fans. And again, it comes down to control. It comes down to the ability for us then to talk directly back to our customers and deliver directly what they want. However, at the same time, with Impact, outside of, you know, the live events and the pay-per-views that we run, we have a huge library of content, and we monetize that very well, like in the fast realm. And that makes sense in that space. We can deliver audiences easy access, low barrier, you know, whether they're accessing on Pluto or any of our other partners. That's a great way for consumers to engage and just sit back and get that kind of dictated experience to us. From our point of view, it's great from a revenue point of view. I'll say there's a challenges from a data point of view, but those are kind of the compromises you face in the sports industry. But ultimately, at least for me and internally here, is always about fan engagement. So it's, I don't think there's one answer. I think you need to be multi distribution points, and you need multiple different ways of entertaining your fans. And I'll loop back to wrestling again, is for the wrestlers, connecting via social is absolutely, you know, the best way of doing it. They're interacting with their fans directly. They're posting immediately, and we see tremendous engagement, and it all feeds. Like, one of these things does not exist to the exclusivity of, or exclusion of any of the others. You need to be able to serve what your fan wants. We need to deliver the best experiences around, you know, our current content. Someone's going to sign in and see value and pay for the subscription service with Impact Plus. Someone's looking to consume some content after a long day at work or after dinner. They flick on the fast channel and they consume some old library content that we're sending them. They're like, this is great. We love this stuff. You know, be it old TNA wrestling that we have from, you know, years gone by. That's a great. And if you're interested in what's going on right now, you're following the wrestlers and you're communicating with them via Facebook, via YouTube, wherever platform that you want. And all of those work together. And that's the reality. There's no one pathway. You absolutely need to be involved everywhere that your fans are, and just figure out what's the best way and how can I deliver the best to them?
Okay, thanks, Michael. And looking at the sports industry today, what do you think are the biggest challenges in regards to streaming and distribution?
It's just too much. We're hitting, and I think that this isn't just for sports. We went through, if we go back 5 years, we went through the explosion of streaming services that continues to this day. And the market has clearly said, for a variety of reasons, some of it economic, some of it is just too much choice. There's just too much, which really begat in the last like 2 years, fast channels. Like, there are 1,700 plus fast channels operating in North America, with literally like dozens of them popping up and going down constantly. That seemed like a great solution, and was a great solution, especially when we were talking during COVID. People just wanted to consume, you know, were very unsure. Low barrier to entry. I didn't have to do anything. I just downloaded the app and I watched. But again, when there's 1,700 and you're seeing the pressures in the ad market, and from a variety of different ways. Economically, people don't really know what the economic situation is going to be. Some people talk recession, some people talk quick bounce back. That's causing a lot of pause in the marketplace. You're seeing with subscription services, people paring down the number of subscription services, just again, because there's just too many. You can see the aggressive pricing that's out there with, you know, some of the big core services, not just in sports. And then the flip side for sports is how long is the run of endless dollars from rights holders going to continue? It's very expensive. You know, NFL, the major leagues will always have a certain amount of buffer, but they're not immune to it. If you look what's happening in the US with the Bally Sports Network, you know, defaulting on paying some teams and just shutting off coverage, that represents significant dollars to those teams from an operational point of view. I know directly, like, for some teams, RSN revenue represents like 30% of their payroll, and it's just gone. So how do you manage that? Those are the real risks out there. And those are the like real challenges fundamentally, because it just comes down to dollars. But at the same time, we're managing, you know, in our space with what you guys do at Exceedo and what I'm in charge of here, is how do you follow the audience? Because if the audience all of a sudden decides they don't want to subscribe because for whatever reason, are they all going to fast? Maybe, maybe not. But then I'm fighting against 1,700 different channels. How do we get surfaced? And how are the fast channels evolving from really just being like a digital EPG and trying to surface content? How do they evolve their product to deliver a better product? Are users going to get sick of ad-supported TV and want to go back to VOD? How fast is that cycle going to happen, right? We went very quickly from cable TV dying off to going into streaming services where people wanted VOD content, subscriber, no advertising. to very quickly to pivoting to fast, like all of a sudden coming out of nowhere. Are we going to pivot back again really quickly? Those are all the challenges you need to be thinking about in that space. And for sports, because the dollars can be so high, it kind of creates a definite two-tier system. Your top leagues, NFL is never going to have to worry about generating a lot of TV money. You know, the same goes for, you know, EPL, the same goes for, you know, cricket, Formula One, all these, they're always have a willing audience internationally of people who will pay in large markets. But that line, it doesn't go gray where some people are making kind of middle money and then there's a lower tier. There's a real hard line. And I'm really interested to see, even for leagues, like I think NHL might be one of the ones that's on the cusp of, will they feel the brunt? They'll get good money. I'm not saying they're not going to get money, but are they going to see the growth that other leagues have seen? And there's a lot of smaller stuff where they're struggling to generate that audience because broadcasters have just spent so much money for rights. They only have so many dollars. And if you got to buy NFL, the rest of your bucket and your budget is pretty much taken up, where you have a hard time filling up the rest of the rest of your schedule. Hence why you're seeing these regional sports networks struggling. The cost of content is so high and it's hard to get a return on that.
Yeah. I was also really interested to see what's going to happen in a year or two with the NBA, because with this most recent talks between Charter and Disney, we've seen that there's a change in how these relationships are being handled. And I as much as I love the NBA, it's a big league, but it's not the NFL. And I don't know if it's going to be able to ask the premium that it was expecting to when it was first predicting its 2026 renegotiation. But
I would throw out there, do they have to? They're so international that can they run a product themselves internationally and generate enough revenue that they don't, not that they don't care, but that they don't need to hit that target for those rights numbers. NBA is an interesting one because their international presence is like exponentially larger than NFL or anybody else. And they've done an amazing job. So I think that's their opportunity window. But then you run into to go completely down a rat hole here, you're going to go into geopolitical stuff. Are the markets in China, are the markets in Asia available to you because of geopolitical tensions? The world is an interesting place right now, we'll say. So they've invested a lot of time and money in those markets. And we've already seen the pushback. But I think NBA is very different just from that aspect.
What do you make of just the Phoenix Suns and the Jazz? They're going free to air this year, right? They're even shipping out antennas so users can watch the games. Obviously, this is a short-term solution, but it's quite interesting, actually.
It's for the side. I mean, you're talking two relatively small media markets. That's the path they chose. Again, I think this goes back to what we talked about earlier. I think they've looked at it and go, what's the best solution I can give my fans, right? You have to look at the business overall holistically. They need to drive bums in the seats. They need to drive merchandise sales. They need to drive awareness. They need to drive growth in those markets. I don't dispute it. I'm sure they've done their homework. They're not, you know, they're very smart people. I think it makes perfect sense to me. Like, as it's an experiment. It's also the same way if they ran their own SWAT service or whatever they wanted to do, that would be a similar experiment. So I think free to air, it's not a bad idea. If you see overall audience growth, overall engagement with your brand go up, you know, if merchandise for NBA teams or for any sports team, it's extremely lucrative, right? You sell one jersey is the equivalent to, you know, a yearly subscription to an SBOT service. So I think they've definitely looked at it, done the numbers. And those are going to be the challenges for those markets. And it makes perfect sense in my mind to try it. You're not losing anything.
Okay, and switching gears a bit, Michael, regarding the recent merger between LIV and the PGA, what do you think this new partnership offers in terms of innovation in golf or even just in sports in general? Like, what might somebody consuming this content expect from something like this?
Sure. I think that's an extreme case. I mean, there's so much money involved in golf and they've already been very innovative, especially, you know, in the augmented reality space and delivering some really interesting experiences to their fans, which has been amazing. It's going to foster growth. I mean, there's a lot of, I'm very interested to see this Tiger and Rory virtual golf league that they're going to put on primetime on network TV inside a venue. Like, it's completely opposite to golf. Golf has always, you know, been a weekend event that you run for hours on TV on a beautiful course somewhere. They've basically taken all that and flipped it on its head. That's innovation. That's going to be really interesting. I don't know if it's going to work or not. I don't know what the gameplay is going to look like from a fan point of view, what I'm going to be able to get out of it. So yeah, all this money coming in, it's not going to hurt innovation because people have targets to hit. And it's just really that simple. But that's also really, in the world of sports, that's a very isolated, you know, a top 1%er problem. I can speak from experience. Like we have very viable businesses in the sports space. Don't have budgets to engage in that. Our core business is engaging the fans we have with great content and finding ways to engage with them that makes sense. The ROI on a $20 million AR execution just doesn't apply to 95% of the sports leagues, which is fine. But it's the learnings that I can get from what PGA is doing. How can we apply it? What can we do? There's options and there's opportunities out there. So technology is great because it does feed down and as it gets commercialized and what was custom or, you know, PS in your world, quickly becomes commoditized if it can be. So it's interesting. I think, Stanley, what it comes down to, like, sports is a really interesting business because unlike other forms of media, the variables in the size of the organizations are drastic. Yes, you have small, you know, traditional TV companies, or like in our case, you have small movie distributors versus large movie distributors. But the sheer volume and the sheer size of those businesses, it doesn't translate the same way it does to sports. And that's a real challenge. Sports too is event-based. There's a huge amount of cost in putting on the events. You know, you don't have sports without something happening. And that's a cost that I think people don't factor in or think about. And it just drives, like right now, like we spoke about macroeconomically, it is a real challenge for some leagues because you're focused on, you have to have an event happening before you can invest a little deeper on the technology side.
Is there any technologies that you do foresee are going to be integrated into OTT in the future that will enhance the user experience, or ones that we're currently seeing now that are just not quite at market stage yet?
I very much the augmented reality space, because you can enhance, fundamentally, you can enhance the sports experience. Sports are obviously the core piece is passion and fandom. The secondary piece has to do with being able to compare and statistics. And I like this player better than that player. This sport is better than that sport, right? We all want to be one up each other. And then, you know, I won't swear, talk smack about our favorite sports, our favorite players. You've seen that already. The rise of sports betting in the North American market is directly related to that. I'm pretending I know about sports. I'm willing to wager money and I want to see rewards. And what do? You tell your buddies, I won $200 last night betting the parlay. Like how many times have we all gone to our friends, look at my parlay ticket on Sunday? That's a natural extension. And then the natural extension to that is being, how do you enhance that person's experience? So I'm watching sports. I have an allegiance to a team, a player. In one way, how that comes out is very much, you know, through betting. I'm going to use my skills or what I think my knowledge is to do that. But then you can enhance that with extra a way to display statistics. It used to be we all played fantasy prior to sports betting. And that was, again, I know more. I know this running back is going to kill this team against this defense this week. I'm going to put him in my lineup and I'm going to sit somebody else. I see Neil smirking because he's done exactly this about a few thousand times. And just how you continue to enhance that fandom. So whether you're displaying, giving someone the ability to see statistics and activities of what the players are doing live, that it just makes sense. And how you continually can you engage them. And as technology grows, can you put fans into the situation even closer? Right? Is instead of watching it on a screen, can I put them closer to the action, give them an even better experience? So whether I'm literally like outside the door of Scotiabank Arena here, or I'm 3,000 kilometers away, I can still get that same experience and enhance that. And that's just going to enhance what you want. Fans who love and are passionate about the sport they're watching. And that translates from you know, NBA all the way down, you know, to pickleball. People love for pickleball, love the intensity of what's happening on the court. The amount of people who actually watch in the stands at a pickleball tournament is shockingly large. But that's because the intensity on the court really translates. And that's part of the, you know, that's a big part of the passion and the growth of that sport, is the ability to kind of translate what the players are doing and what they're feeling and how they're exerting themselves and the skill level. And it comes down to the passion you can get. How do you get that across on the screen? So it definitely technology can help, as long as you're kind of fostering what people want out of sports, which is you want to go yell and scream and cheer on your team. You want to feel the energy when your team scores, your team wins. Those are all the things that you want to be able to get your fans to experience in the best way possible.
I want to add a follow-up question to that, Michael. It's one that has been sitting with me for a while, but would you rather, if you think of, you want to be in the stands of an NBA game or an NHL game or an NFL game, would you rather be in the stands in person, or would you rather be at home live watching the game? And do you think that we're at a point yet where people would actually prefer the latter?
No, I think we've seen that still is kind of bearing out post-COVID, where we didn't have events. And what everyone thought was the initial bump when we were able to attend events in person again, a lot of people thought that was going to be a bump and things would settle down where people didn't want to go. That has not proven. You are seeing record attendance. You're seeing strong attendance across the board. I think people are really reveling and still enjoying the fact that of, and still discovering what it's like to be back in mass groups and enjoying being part of an event. We see that with not even cross sports. You see that with concerts. Taylor Swift is singularly proving that people want to be part of something live and in person.
Never heard of
that. Exactly. Lies. But I don't think we're at that point. We have the ability to give people a better experience and to be places they haven't been before, but I don't think that's because they don't want to be there. I think they just can't be there. And we can so easily consume content from every corner of the world, that why not? I would love to be in an EPL stadium watching some incredible soccer, but I can't. I can't afford to fly over, you know, to the UK every weekend. But if you can put that experience there, I would love to. But ultimately, you'd love to be there. You want to experience that. So I think it's a combination. It's not going to be, it'll never replace.
Interesting. I don't know if you, speaking of Taylor Swift, if you saw the viewership jump of the KC game after they spotted her in the box.
Yep. Not to mention the merchandise sales. It just goes down to, again, like, it's that in a nutshell is, and I'm not going to be cynical and say this is a marketing exercise, but you can see how the passion for football and the passion for being a Taylor Swift fan intersected. You see a bump in viewership. Apparently Travis Kelce merchandise sale, like his jersey sales, went up something like 400%. That wasn't that difficult to do. Like, again, I'm not trying to be cynical and I don't want to sound cynical, but you know, if she and Travis are together, that's a great like bit of marketing right there to open up your audience. From an NFL point of view, to a gigantic, somehow potentially even a bigger audience than the NFL, which are Swifties. And it worked. They're interested. They're engaging. They're spending their dollars. They're watching. One more, like, it's beautiful. It goes back to the point. Like, how are you engaging fans? How are you building your audience? That's a pretty amazing kind of case study in the matter of probably a couple hours.
Yeah, I believe the Kelce Brother podcast was quite popular afterwards as well. It's interesting, the cross promotion, how much it actually does help. And like you were saying, just being at every medium that your fans want to be at is really important.
And you bring up a point, is this goes down deeper into the marketing side of things. And again, with platforms, whether you want to call this OTT, I just tend to just call it platforms. The incredible power of influencer marketing. And you see this with all different sports, bringing in people from, you know, who have audiences, who have followings from different, I'll just call it verticals, bringing them to sporting events. How do you grow that audience? It's been a massive success across the board. And you can't watch any sort of major sporting event without seeing, and you know, there are obviously going to be other athletes, but you see musicians, you see people who are, you know, from a lifestyle brand that have no real connection to that sport, but every league is bringing those folks in because it just drives engagement, drives, you know, audience participation, and it opens the door to whole new audiences out there for you. That is, I think that is one of the kind of the undersold areas in pro sports. And you know, even from they're doing kids broadcasts. I mean, I know the NFL of Nickelodeon does that. To go back to Formula One, they have, Sky has a kids version of, you know, their broadcast. That's really smart because you're bringing in people who aren't, you know, the core fans. You're trying to grow that audience. You have to, and that's really where technology helps. And, you know, from an OTT perspective, that's how you're going to grow your audience, and that's how you're going to sustain your business. You have to always engage, engage, engage. And KPIs, it's obvious for those sports. We need to build. We need younger. Football is, you know, being played by less and less kids. So they have to engage them in different ways. So football's done a very good job. NFL getting into the lifestyle piece. How often do you see NFL players now, you know, conversely participating in musical events or acts, participating in movies and things like that? That is all on the rise because that is how you're going to engage people and keep your audiences.
And tapping into your experience, Michael, you know, in the sports industry, have you, or what was the biggest strategy shift that you've seen in the industry since you've been in the market or in sports?
You have some really big questions, Stanley. I think just from my perspective, I've been really lucky. Like I started in television and I moved to digital, and I've been really lucky that there's been kind of this endless growth cycle of, you know, be it the growth of kind of starting when cable TV was growing and all of a sudden there were 10,000 sports channels everywhere and regional, you know, seeing that happen and that growing, seeing the rise of just how people realizing how valuable live sports are to your, you know, to your media business. The big shift, obviously, you know, in the broadest of terms, was digital, just now getting control back. And you're seeing now to the point, I think we're seeing, we're maybe like 5 years away from seeing the full realization of that. You see deals like the MLS and Apple deal. When you kind of unpack that, and it's not just owning, you know, MLS completely top to bottom, I don't think it's a surprise, you know, that that deal was announced and within 6 months, Lionel Messi is playing in the MLS. It's not a surprise that there's a World Cup coming to North America in a couple of years. That kind of planning and that kind of strategic construction of your business and your sport is, I think that's the real revelation. You know, Amazon did it with Thursday Night Football. You know, the first thing they talked about was how many Prime subscribers. They didn't care about how many people watched. The first thing they said was this was the single biggest day of growth for Prime subscribers in our history. So I think that revolution of it going from sports is being broadcast for the sake of just consumption of a type of content. I'm going to choose sports. I'm going to choose movie. I'm going to choose news. That's gone away. Sports allows you to get into many, many different areas. And hence why, you know, the big technology companies or anybody is finding ways to weave that into every single aspect of their business. Apple is selling more services, more subscriptions, obviously more sponsorship, all based on that. And it wasn't just, oh, let's decide we're going to bid on MLS rights. There's no one will ever admit it, but there's no way you can't tell me they were not negotiating with Messi and team or whoever else much earlier than that. That was far too, things just didn't fall into place. And you follow that timeline and you follow that straight through to World Cup, that makes a lot of sense. But I think that fundamentally is the biggest change. There was obviously the pivot to digital, strictly from a consumption point of view from the consumer. But now what does digital offer you? You can do anything on your device, right? I can watch, I can shop, I can consume, I can chat, I can connect, I can share, everything you can do. You know, the leaders in the space are making sure that you can do all that via sports, and that's the vehicle.
Well, is there anything that's remained consistent over time?
People, like the fandom, the passion, that's never gone away for sports. And never, I don't think it ever will. It's always been the most important piece in broadcasting. You look at, you know, the most watched events every year. What is it? 99 out of 100 are sports every year. You, people's passion and connection to sports is not going away.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason the Super Bowl's advertising starts at around $7 million. You're getting 100 million people watching. It's absolutely factual.
And not only that, just regardless of the economic situation, they're getting those dollars. And that's telling. You know, you see pullbacks in the ad market everywhere. But the dollars are being delivered, the dollars are being collected. So it just makes, you know, it just emphasizes and reinforces how strong and important sports are to consumption of content.
Speaking more on just general viewership and fandom, obviously since the pandemic, sports viewership in general has still just been growing steadily. And in North America, people have started to really love pickleball. Like you said, pickleball stadiums are filling up. But with all these sports leagues trying to engage more people, we're seeing more of these Drive to Survive type documentary styles. Is this just the next step in marketing for them, where they're just going digital, social, and then also docuseries? That's just the next portion for them?
Oh, I think there's just a tremendous amount of just copying, plain and simple. No one ever predicted the success of Drive to Survive. I am absolutely like a lifelong Formula One fan. I never in a million years thought that series would do what it's done. So I think you're just seeing people trying to copy, especially that very much that specific, you know, following along for a season, trying to manufacture a certain amount of, you know, of drama around the sport and turning your players into characters. I don't know if I have yet to see it be replicated. It's very specific. Formula One they were very smart because there's only, you know, there's only a certain number of drivers, certain number of teams. It's international. It's contained. The opportunity to, and it's very flashy. You know, I think if you were going to map this out in a traditional kind of movie, it's like, oh, you know, how can we make this is splashy? Yes. Do we have great venues like all across the world and great visuals? Yes. You know, things are loud. They're fast. You have a bunch of, you know, young international drivers who, you know, are look good on camera, are intense. It works. I don't know if it translates. I have yet to see it. You see, there have been tons of great sports documentaries. There's no two ways around it. But I think right now, the copying aspect of Drive to Survive is out of control. I don't know. So you read about another series every week. Yeah, I don't think it's I would be surprised if anyone hits the same home run that Formula One has.
Yeah, I mean, Hard Knocks has been around for a long time, and it's popular, but it doesn't have the same juice that D2S did. But it's just like you said, there's way more characters to focus on, or players, I should say. But it's a lot easier in Formula One, where you can focus on a lot less people and really drum it up more.
It's the classic scenario, right? It's good looking people, lots of money, doing really lavish stuff. Like, it's not, is it really that different? And I know this sounds ridiculous, but is it really different than like the whole Housewives series? No, they're really good looking people living lavishly with a lot of drama in their life. It's not, you know, as far as reality TV, that's a pretty good formula.
The recipe, that's hilarious.
Okay, so I've been following the PWHL lately, the Professional Women's Hockey League. Mm-hmm. Michael, so you're nodding your head as well. Super exciting news. The season starts January 2024, so actually just in a couple of months. There's 24 games to be played. You know, rosters are now filled up. We had the free agent signings. Nurse is coming to Toronto. Team's not at the point of getting their team names, but we know the locations. I'm just curious to know, if you have any insights as it relates to OTT coverage, advertising investments, what type of impact this would have, and particularly in a market like women's sports?
What has impressed me the most is how tactical they have been, regardless if it's women's sports or not. I think they've been incredibly smart and like really tactical on how they're releasing information and building, you know, the buzz and the hype around it. Whoever their marketing lead is, hats off, like you're doing a great job. And they need to, because the simple fact is it's going to be, you know, the real challenge is getting bums in the seats. I'm going to assume they want to be on broadcast TV and generating, you know, good revenues in as many markets and as many places they can be. But I think it's like any sport or any league that's starting out from nothing is you have to be smart. You have to build the buzz. You have to build the awareness. You have to find your hook. And you need to grow that audience. And like I said, I think they've done a really good job creating hype, creating awareness around the players, being in places where they can get their message out effectively. That's really hard to do. And I think they've done, you know, a really good job in that space. It's the challenge is, like, as always, next step, right? Get the league up and running, get it viable in these cities. Financially, do you, like, what's your runway? I don't want to sound really clinical about it, but I don't know the funding model behind it, but that's going to be a big factor, is do you have the financial runway to run this for, is this a 2-year, 3-year commitment? It's like any startup. It's about customer acquisition at this point. I think, like I said, they've been doing great. If they're at this kind of skill level already as they're starting out, I don't doubt that they have a very comprehensive and smart plan to do that. But it's customer acquisition at this point. You got your seed money, you kicked off. Now you need the people paying to watch your product or buy your product, and that's the next piece.
Yeah, I totally agree. It seemed very organic. I was picking it up almost everywhere. Friends are talking about it. Really exciting. The last time I really heard about, you know, women's hockey was at, I believe it was like a Sochi at the Olympics level, right? That was sort of the pinnacle. But now we've got the PHL, which is happening, and those names that are attached to those teams. Is there a team right now, Michael, that you're rooting for? I know we don't have any team names yet, but is there one that you're really, I believe there's 6 altogether. I guess you'd have to go with Toronto in this case, right?
I don't have to. I'm going to phrase it this way. I'm going to kind of evade your question a little bit. The one challenge that nobody talks about, or very few people are talking about, that I think they've managed to accomplish here, is they've navigated the politics around sports. We all think sports is everyone working together and playing together. There's a tremendous amount of politics in sports and people who want to have their fingers in it, people who want to influence what's happening. And that goes from, you know, the kids level to amateur sports, to minor sports, you know, up to professional sports. I think we should really be looking to support the league that they've navigated this, because women's hockey was, again, full of politics, still is full of politics, but they've done an amazing job in getting people to buy in, to move this forward, because they realize, like, we got to work together to make this happen. So as far as, like, rooting for a team, can't, because they don't exist right now, but I think we should really be rooting for the fact that they managed to pull this together and pull this off and now are executing at that level. I've been fortunate enough to work with amateur sports. It's really tough. Like, you look, even in this city, the politics involved with something like, you know, the GTHL, it's insane. I mean, we all have friends who have kids who are playing hockey, just between the different leagues and things like that. I shake my head sometimes at the stories you hear about that. So I think we should really celebrate the fact that they've put this together, got everyone aligned. That, I can't even imagine how heavy of a lift that was.
Yeah, really looking forward to January coming around and being able to check out some of the games in person or on TV.
I mentioned it a little bit earlier, but we saw this whole Charter and Disney negotiation happen where sports, for the first time, didn't have the impact on the bundle or on the cable deal as it did before. What do you think of that? And do you think this is now just going to be the way forward of mixed cable and OTT bundles, or is everyone going to follow that?
I think you're seeing all these companies just facing the reality is what the consumer's telling you. There's only so many dollars. People have subscription fatigue, wherever that comes from, whether that's with via cable. We've seen that transition. We see the cable numbers in the US, the households are absolutely tanking at an alarming rate. you have no choice but to talk to your consumer and give them what they want. This goes back to what we talked about earlier, like just the rise of fast. That came from too many OTT services, you know, too many dips in the pocket. My credit card bill was like 7 pages long with like 25 services I don't remember that I even subscribed for, right? It's like the gym membership. You know, that's happened. That's why fast came. And then now we're, you know, you're predicting again. So I think these are just natural extensions of what the consumer's telling you. In typical, and I'll probably get in trouble for this, but in typical traditional TV land, it's taking a long time. A lot of people don't want to pay for sports in the cable bundle. We know that that is the by far and away the biggest chunk of dollars in your cable bills to pay for, whether it's, you know, ESPN in the US or, you know, you're in Canada paying for TSN or Sportsnet. That's the big chunk. People have to make financial decisions. People are making decisions based on what they consume and where they consume it. And maybe they are buying. Maybe they are buying direct instead and don't want that as part of their cable package. To me, it's just natural. Like, consumers have demanded it. Consumers have already moved, spoken with their wallets. These guys are just reacting to it. Finally.
Hey, thanks, Michael. We'll leave you with one last question before we wrap things up. And on a scale of 9 to 10, how excited are you about the white hot Bedard joining the Blackhawks?
So for those who don't know, yes, I've been a Blackhawks fan for many, many years. Of course, you're excited. You have the potential to see a generational talent join your team. It'll be exciting. And this sounds really terrible, but I hope my team tanks for another season. One draft pick is great. Two high draft picks, a lot better. It's very typical what you're seeing. Like for a league like the NHL, it's you're managing the salary cap, you're managing your roster, and you're trying to create a window for, be it like 4 or 5 years, where you have top tier players at affordable prices, and you make a run for, you know, for the championship again. The Blackhawks have a very clear blueprint. They did this before, not that long ago. So hopefully it's just, let's reproduce this.
Before we wrap up here though, Michael, I just want to give you the floor. You've offered your generous time to join myself and Neil to join the podcast today, offering your insights in the sports and OTT industry. Is there anything else that you wanted to add or something that we didn't quite get to today that you just wanted to address? Burning hot.
No, I think we've addressed everything. And I think for me, it really comes down to is, you know, what you learn very quickly is everything is dictated by what your audience does. How much, you know, whether it's the crass things in life, like how much money you make. But the reality is, like, fans dictate and audiences dictate everything. And if you're not following kind of those basic tenets, you're just setting yourself up for disaster. And I think there's a real interesting, as we grow, as businesses grow, you know, as a lot of companies are looking, you know, globally to grow revenues, grow audiences, it's going to be really interesting to see who succeeds, because different markets, and we're going to talk about us being North American, and we're very, you know, in a bubble. You know, we were talking with this whole podcast, we've talked about North American sports and a North American market. And we're facing this, you know, with Anthem, with all of our brands, is we want to grow internationally. You need to be aware people consume differently. And that's going to mean very different things in different markets. And you need to adapt. And can you deliver in that space? Live events might work on TikTok in Africa versus, you know, trying to sell someone a typical kind of cable experience, because people don't want to sit back and lean. That's just not what they're used to. That's not what their existence has been growing up. I always love to tell a story. Like in India, lock screens are sponsored in ad spaces on mobile devices. That's just standard. No one, like for us, that's absolutely like foreign. It makes no sense to us. Like our lock screens, you put pictures of, you know, be it loved ones or your pet or anything like that. But that fundamental difference are things that we need to adapt and how you change and how you're going to get to market. So duplicating your multi-platform, however we want to call it, digital experience to your audience that you're delivering in North America to other markets, probably not going to work. You want to do it that way because it's probably a lot more cost effective. It's what you know, but you need to be able to adapt. And I think as we see kind of things globalize and continue to globalize, the people who are going to win, and it might not be the big leagues, are going to be the people who can adapt to the market and understand that, be it culturally, be it geographically, for whatever reason, technologically, you need to deliver a different experience. So I think that's kind of, I'll leave you with that as kind of my food for thought at the back end. But thank you guys for having me. I appreciate you taking the time and willing to listen to my ramblings.
Thank you again so much, Michael, for joining. We'll wrap it up there and enjoy the rest of your day, the rest of your week. And yeah, we'll stay connected.
Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Great speaking to you.
To our guests, thank you for joining Neil and myself on today's episode. And of course, a big thank you to you, our listeners. As a reminder, you can subscribe to the Playback podcast, which can be found on all major streaming platforms. Or if you'd like to reach out to us directly, send us an email to playback.podcast@axedo.tv. Have a great day.